Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Heartland Politics show and podcast here on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of Eastern Iowa and Northwestern Illinois. I'm your guest or host, Robin Johnson. And today we've got a very interesting topic. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard of the Chicago 7, but how many of you have heard of the North Dakota 9? Probably not many, but this group was involved in a very, very important case, court case back in the 1980s that really had a major impact on the family farm in a very tumultuous decade in our country's history. I'm joined today by the author of a recent book about the North Dakota Nine. In fact, she was the attorney involved in the case that I mentioned, and it's a very interesting and important book, and I think it still has important ramifications to this day. Her name is Sarah Vogel, and the name of the book is The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. Sarah, thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a very interesting book. I'm curious. Of course, these events took place in the 1980s, and you published the book in 2021. What took you? Was this just a case of something you wanted to do and never got around to it, or why after 40 years did you decide to undertake this?
It's a little. I'll have to give a little bit of a long answer to that question.
That's fine.
Good question. I knew when I was working on the case that it was extremely important. But when the case was over, I had become agriculture commissioner, first assistant attorney general, then agriculture commissioner, and then I was practicing law for many decades, mostly with farmers. And throughout, I was saving all of the papers from this case, and I knew that this case about the North Dakota Nine was probably the most important case I would ever work on. So I saved the files. There ended up being hundreds of boxes that I collected eventually about the case and a subsequent case and the laws that were adopted as a result of the case. But it was always in the back of my mind that that was a very important story. And so eventually I was able to transition out of full-time practice of law so that I could focus on the book. And then it took me about 10 years, three of which were spent writing and seven of which were spent dithering around and collecting material. But I wanted to write the book. The urgency of writing the book when I did in 2021 is because I felt that another farm depression could come and was coming, and I could feel it coming. And I thought, I don't want to see farmers have to go through the same kinds of things that they went through in the 80s. So I wrote the book for that purpose.
Well, let's start right at the ground level. You described, you know, this time in our country's history is really the golden age of agriculture, the 70s, 80s, during that period. What happened? What changes occurred that caused some of the difficulties that wound up having you getting involved?
Well, it was a lot of national problems and economic issues were floating around. But I would say that the trigger was Ronald Reagan's Department of Agriculture, USDA, which set off a delinquency reduction goal where they wanted to reduce the rate of delinquencies that were on many of their loans. And the reasons why the loans were delinquent wasn't that the farmers were unproductive or unsuccessful. They were very successful. They were producing, but the prices that they were receiving compared to the interest rates and costs that they had to pay was completely disparate. From the 30s, we had a word called parity, but boy, in the early 80s, there was nothing but disparity. And so that is the set situation where farmers were very successful, but they were becoming delinquent. And then in the middle of all that, in 1982, I forget the exact date, Ronald Reagan set off a cataclysm by calling for a delinquency reduction goal. And what they did, the only way they could reduce the delinquencies in this, and where the prices were not, the prices farmers were getting were not equivalent to the costs that they were paying, was to foreclose. So all of a sudden, the USDA started to foreclose on thousands. First, they would accelerate the debt, and that was completely 100% due. A 40-year loan was suddenly, that was in its third year, second year, was suddenly, it's due today. 30 days, you have to pay it in full. And no farmer could do that. And so they were pressured to quit. And the more land that went on the market, the more values went down. And then it became like a whirlpool sucking all kinds of farmers. And it happened very fast. If something like that happened today, it would also happen very fast. And I wrote the book so that that could not happen again, so that this type of mistreatment of farmers would not happen again.
So how did you, you were a young attorney, how did you get involved in this initially?
I disliked Farmers Home a lot. I disliked USDA a lot. One of my early jobs after law school was being in charge of the Equal Credit Opportunity Act enforcement program at the FTC, right when the law had first been adopted. And the worst agency, the worst lender in the country that I could see at that time that discriminated the most on race and sex and so forth was USDA, which is like, what? This is a federal law? And this is a federal agency not following a federal law. It made no sense. So I developed a strong suspicion of USDA's lending program. And then first when one farmer and then many other farmers came and told me about this absolutely horrible way that this federal agency was behaving, I think a lot of lawyers would have said the farmer must be exaggerating. Maybe disbelieve the farmer or think that the farmer must have been at fault. But because I had had that experience when I was a Washington, D.C. lawyer at the Federal Trade Commission and at the Treasury Department, I knew that the farmers weren't fibbing, that this agency really was that bad. So naively, I decided to represent them and to sue USDA. And at the time I was a solo practitioner working out of my house, but it seemed like a very good idea. So what I did is I prepared for the case kind of undercover, you could say, for a year before I filed it.
So word got out, apparently. Well, the book talks about it. I'll let our listeners, again, it's a great book. It reads like a thriller, almost a mystery novel, but it's true. But word got out and you started getting a lot of business here. But economically, it wasn't easy on you because some of the folks couldn't afford to pay you.
None of the folks could afford to pay me. By definition, every penny that they earned from their farms was supposed to go to the federal government. And if they sent any of the money to me, they'd be committing a felony. So sometimes the farmer would offer to pay me and I said, no, you can't, because there's one thing about being in civil problem, having a civil law problem, but you don't want a criminal law problem as well. So they couldn't pay me. So they paid me in food. They paid me in carpentry work at my house. They sometimes had gas in their tanks at their farms and they would bring me gas from my car. And they were the best clients I can ever imagine. I mean, they were clients that I was so proud to represent. And I'd never seen anybody be treated that badly as those farmers were treated in the early 80s. So I eventually realized that not only was USDA violating the law, because under Jimmy Carter, there'd been a law that was passed that was supposed to allow farmers to apply for a deferral whenever they, due to circumstances beyond their control, temporarily couldn't pay their debt. So they should have been eligible to apply for that law. And then when I take my farmers through a process called exhaustion of administrative remedies, which you have to go through before you can sue the federal government, I learned how incredibly unfair the so-called hearing system was that USDA offered. It was blatantly unconstitutional. Sometimes the very person whose decision was being appealed would be the hearing officer. And I lost every single hearing I had, every single one. But I had to do those hearings in order to file a lawsuit. So it took about a year. And then we filed the case with the North Dakota Nine, who were my lead plaintiffs and were the real heroes of the case.
Explain for our listeners here who may not be aware the importance of this becoming a class action suit. You explain that in legal terms in the book, and I think you do a good job of it, but just to, and why that was so significant in taking these individual cases and making them into a class action lawsuit.
Well, the farmers were one, each farmer was stripped of all of the income from their farm. Everything they had was pledged to the federal government. So if they went one by one to do a hearing or even go into court, the federal government at the time, and by the way, people were suing about the deferral law throughout the country, but the minute they would do, if an individual farmer won a case, the federal government went ahead and was doing the same thing to a whole bunch of other farmers and would not stop just because they had to stop as to one farmer. And in the meantime, of course, they were starving them out. Or sending them to this unconstitutional hearing system. So I knew vaguely that there was something called a class action where you would pick people who were representative of people in the class. And so I decided I would do it as a class action. And I knew nothing about class actions. And my father, who was a lawyer and former judge, just got terrified when I thought I would, when I said I was going to do that as a sue the federal government in a class action from my house in Bismarck with clients who couldn't pay. So he sent me to a class action seminar where I learned about it and I got help from a really fabulous class action lawyer. And I was very fortunate because even though I started this case alone, I ended up getting other lawyers to step in, including the National ACLU, a class action expert, and others who were supportive. So I started it alone, but it didn't end it alone.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Sarah Vogel, who's written a book everybody should read. This is, goes beyond just farmers. It goes to all of us living in rural communities. It's called The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. The foreword, by the way, is written by none other than Willie Nelson. Yes, that Willie Nelson. Sarah's been talking a little bit about the basics of the case, walking us through the case here. And so we left before the reintroduction here, where you're in trial, and we'll move ahead a little bit just because, you know, because we're time limited. But so what happened? How, what did the judge decide in this class action suit?
We won big time. First, we won for North Dakota, and then the farmers from around the country started to call me. And the trigger point for me was a call from, in the middle of the night, from a farmer from Mississippi. And he called, he woke me up, but I always answered the phone because so many farmers were suicidal. You know, I had to pick up the phone. So I picked up the phone, and it was a farmer from Mississippi. And he said, would you please do for us in Mississippi what you've done for the farmers of North Dakota? Because we really need you. And I said, could you call me at work? I can't remember if it was a weekend or just a weeknight, but I said, could you call me at work? I think it was, might have been a weekday. Tomorrow when I'm at the office. And he said, I don't know if I can last that long. Yeah. So I went to the office the next day and I called all my co-counsel and I said, we have to do this as a national class. And they all agreed. And so I went back to the judge, and long story short, he did make it into a national class action. And it ended up stopping, I think it was 12,000 foreclosure cases were already in court. And they all had to be sent back. Anyway, it was very, very dramatic, very dramatic. And I tried to write it as a dramatic book because that's the way that the real world was at the time. And I have to brag a little bit because one of the blurbs I have, in addition to Willie Nelson, is John Grisham. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Grisham's novels. And on a sort of a whirl, I happened to get an email to him. My agent said, this is John Grisham's email, and if you share it with anybody, you die. So I sent him an email about it, and I think John Grisham I know John Grisham had been a small town lawyer in Mississippi, and anyway, he read my letter and 10 minutes or email, and 10 minutes after I sent it, he responded, this is John, I'd love to read your book. So there's a very nice blurb also by John Grisham. And to me, that's super meaningful to me.
And for those of you who think this was just a straight line of Sarah getting involved in this case and everything went smooth up until the verdict, no, this is a up and down, ups and downs of this case over the years. And again, I won't get into it. I'll let you read it and see for yourself. But are you... Looking back, Sarah, I'm reading it and I'm feeling like, wow, what perseverance to keep up with this. I'm sure you had doubts along the way, and you sure that you did, but are you surprised now looking back that, wow, I did that? And I mean, I stuck with that all those years and it considerable hardship on yourself.
I am surprised, and on my own, I never would have able to I never would have been able to manage this. But what would happen, and it was almost magical, if I would be really, really down, ready to give up, I would get a call. Most of the time from Dwight Coleman, who was the, I listed them alphabetically, but he was one of the nine. And he'd say, "Hey, hi, how are you?" And, you know, so it was the farmers who kept me going. And it was the importance of, I knew what was happening to them was so wrong. And by the way, I grew up in North Dakota in a political party most people have never heard about called the Nonpartisan League. And the Nonpartisan League in the 1930s, 19-teens through 1930s, was always on the side of the farmers. And they had a moratorium. Governor Langer announced a moratorium on foreclosures, and the state of North Dakota sent out marshals to stop foreclosures. And so I grew up hearing about how farmers had been faced with foreclosure in the 30s, but because of the brave actions of the Nonpartisan League politicians, those foreclosures were stopped. And as soon as times got better, shortly thereafter, the farms recovered and were able to pay their loans and so on. And basically the same kind of thing applied in the 80s as applied in the 30s. The farmers were incredibly productive, incredibly good at what they were doing. It was the economy and certain things like the Russian grain embargo and interest rate hikes. You know, 20% increase, 20% interest rates were virtually impossible in those days. Yeah. with low farm prices.
Yeah. How, I mean, looking back since then, you know, you mentioned that the legislation was passed in 1987, which adopted some reforms in the loan process, but how, a lot of time has gone by then. How have family farms fared since then? I mean, it seems like we've still got some of the same pressures on them. They may come from different sources, but as you point out in the book, that it's the middle farmer, middle-sized farmer that's really been hollowed out.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm very worried about that. I also see incredible potential for new farms if the federal government and the state governments and people would take certain steps to support them. So I think we can stop this drastic decline of small and medium-sized family farmers. It can be done, but it's going to take public policy and changes. And so that's another reason why I wrote the book, is to make people understand the importance of family farmers to our economy, to our psyche, to our food security, to our national security.
I like, we've just got a couple minutes left here. I like how culture gets involved in politics and policy. And you mentioned, I thought it was really interesting towards the end of the book, you mentioned the movie Country, which I'm old enough to remember. And that you felt that the tide of public opinion, which sometimes lags a little bit, that's when it really turned when that movie came out. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Jessica Lange, I think, recognized that this was happening. And she was working on the movie while I was working on the case. And the national... national preliminary injunction came out as she was wrapping up the movie. And I was sending her affidavits and pleadings, and she was talking to broke farmers in Iowa. So it's almost a documentary. I mean, it is such a true movie. She was nominated for an Academy Award, and the movie Country was extremely popular. And when people saw it, I think it made a huge difference to people, politicians recognizing it. Ronald Reagan, by the way, watched it and he thought it was horrible. But like, he's the only person, I think, in America who thought it was a horrible movie. But yeah, she deserves a great deal of credit for telling that story in a way that, you know, many, 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 many thousands of people saw. And she testified before Congress. And the movie ends with the actual injunction that Judge Van Sickle promulgated. I mean, it's like a true story. So I think if people want to watch the movie Country, that's fun. And then read my book.
And this also led to the first Farm Aid concert as well, which I'm old enough to remember that as well.
Yeah. Willie Nelson, the publicity he brought, and then the millions and millions of dollars that he distributed to small farm groups and farmers throughout the country was absolutely huge. And that's why, like, I am like, for this book to have a foreword by Willie Nelson just moves me so much. And, you know, he's still holding these Farm Aid concerts, and they're still raising money for farmers, and it's still necessary. And so people out there who are listening to your podcast can give money to Farm Aid, and it will be used quite well.
Well, I'm glad you wrote the book, Sarah. And it's a really good read. I recommend it to listeners, especially out this area of Iowa and Illinois, where there's still serious challenges facing family farmers. The book, again, is called The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine, and the Fight to Save the Family Farm. And the author is Sarah Vogel, who is the attorney for the North Dakota Nine. She's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.